हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। ओके सो देन भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 2 आदिकारण 1 भक्ति इज ऑल ऑस्पिशियस रिमूव्स ऑल सिंस एंड देयर रिएक्शंस। ओके Okay, so then here we have 5, 4. Okay, so then in the summary, Adhikarana summary, then the Vishaya, our thesis, pure bhakti offered to the Supreme Lord is the best of all processes. There is nothing higher than this, as bhakti bestows all desires and removes all obstacles for a devotee. Right, so when it says all, it's not just meaning just the ones that we see in front of us, you know, the physical or mental challenges or intellectual challenges that we may go through. It also means the you know, what's beyond that, right? So then it gives here, then they're giving a quote from Bhagavatam, the path followed by persons who are friendly, virtuous, and surrendered to Narayan is certain, auspicious, and without fear of obstacles, right? So right here, that's the, you know, sums up the whole Adhikarana, is that it's auspicious, you know, removes all sins and their reactions, right? And yeah. So here then it says that the Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.17, right? Certain, auspicious, and without fear of obstacles. So here it mentions about fear, what that comes up, what the main obstacle is. Then it says fear in jnana is caused by loneliness, and fear in karma caused by envy, right? These do not arise in bhakti, right? Because loneliness comes because you've removed the material world, but you haven't added the spiritual world in the relationship with the Lord and the devotees. So you're alone. When the jiva becomes self-realized, you know, and gets mukti, he is alone. It's just him. I mean, of course, he's surrounded by Brahman, which is Krishna, but there's no personal element. And so therefore, since the jiva is personal, despite whatever they may think, he gets lonely, right? So it's just a matter of time before they come back, right? That's why you're guaranteed they're going to come back, because they haven't situated themselves in the spiritual world. And since they've neglected spiritual activity, spiritual relationships, spiritual experiences and emotions, right? Deeming them, deeming that these things in principle are a problem because they only know them from the material. Therefore, when they do get beyond the, you know, happiness that they feel being relieved from being in the material world, once that's over, then they want to get back to doing something. And that doing something, they only know the material world. So they will come back. So it's not a matter of maybe, maybe not. This is the mechanics why they come back. They're lonely because they haven't acknowledged or accepted the relationships of the spiritual world. So therefore, they will come back. It's guaranteed like that, unless they take up bhakti. If they take up bhakti, then it will have a meaning. Right? Because then they will transfer, like we see the four Kumaras, they will transfer then to the spiritual, the transcendental platform. That then they can maintain eternally, because there they have the relationship with the Lord. So as an impersonalist on that, they may come forward, like we see the four Kumaras of Sukadeva Goswami, to adding the Lord into the point. So then that, because the Lord is there, that not forgetfulness, and they don't have an identity with the material energy, with the gross and subtle matter. Therefore, then they will function on the spiritual platform in that same, I mean, in the transcendental experience on the spiritual platform. So liberation means you come up to the spiritual platform, but because you don't go on to the transcendental, then they will come back from the spiritual down to the material. They will enter karma again, right? Because they're lonely. They need an identity like that. And for the karmis, then envy is the problem, because the main obstacle in karma, that you're doing your karma nicely, is envy of others, right? That's always going to be the main thing, right? You know, like we see with the Pandavas, then Duryodhana, he's envious, and then his associates, you know, does that make sense? You know, that the activities, there's always someone envious. And Tom says, envious of, you know, Krishna, you know, because of his karma. He's envious of him and the Brajbasis and the Yadu dynasty. So he just makes trouble like that. You know, you see it's the demons, they get envious of the demigods. They want to take over the heavenly planets, you know. So that's what you're working with in karma, is the obstacle is envy, you know, either, you know, someone is having envy towards us, we're having envy towards them. The whole thing is just, how you say, as Hansaduta Maharaj would say, a can of worms, right? You know, it's just a bunch of worms going around, and who's the superior worm at which moment, and this and that. So it's not glorious. Only when it's connected to Krishna, then we see it becomes glorious. That's the actual point. Means below that, if they're pious and all that and following the Vedic principles, then you can say, yes, okay, it's glorious for other materialists, that if they are situated in goodness and doing their duties, there's more of a chance they'll come in contact with bhakti and then get an opportunity to move forward. So it's the opportunity for bhakti that gives piety its glory. But most people don't know that. They think it's the sense gratification and that, you know, the control and everything like that, that makes it glorious. But no, it's the opportunity for bhakti that makes it glorious. There isn't something else. So in other words, there's bhakti in the cosmos, and then there's lack of bhakti and envy. That's all. That's basically what it comes down to. So, you know, so the jnana, fear, they're lonely because they're fearful, because they're fearful of the relationship with the Lord. Right? So then they end up with loneliness and they come back. And the others, their fear is because they're envious of others, and others will be envious of them. And so then whatever they've gained in the way of, you know, material facility and prosperity or position or power, authority, knowledge, something, someone else is going to come along and take that glory away from them. Right? Okay. So then the shamshaya, then the answer. Oh no, samshaya is the doubt. Okay. How can you say that bhakti is all auspicious and removes all obstacles, when there's a chance that a devotee may fall down from the path of bhakti, right? So it's auspicious. So that means it's, you know, it's always doing good, removes all obstacles. That means there should be no difficulty moving forward. So, but how can you say that when there's a chance a devotee may fall down from the path of bhakti? Because that means a great obstacle has come and the auspiciousness stops. So how can you say is that bhakti is all auspicious, it's eternal, all these things? And then now they're going to give their reasoning, you know, reasoning or evidence, so, you know, these kind of things. So in other words, the shamshaya is always going to be the point you're making. I mean, excuse me, the vishaya is going to be the point being made. The theme, right? So everything's going to be based on establishing the theme. Then, you know, you're giving your reasoning, and then from that reasoning, someone can have a doubt. And that they may have already thought about it before, so immediately upon your presenting of the Vishaya or presenting your thesis, then, you know, the Pratigya, they can already be presenting their doubt because they've already thought about it before. But in any case, they come up with their doubts. So now they're going to give their reasoning and their examples in that. In other words, you're going to have that you have the five functioning here that you're presenting, right? But then someone else comes along and their ideas, they're going to stick their five in here and convince you. But actually, then you just have to remove these bottom parts and like that, and then you've convinced them. So they don't get to the end of their argument, because in the discussion going back and forth, then they're convinced. So that's then you know, because the whole idea is someone should be convinced because you're trying to get to vada or conclusion, right? And when you're dealing with the conclusion of bhakti, then no other material thing can actually win. You know, there may be a temporary setback. You don't know what to say. But the point is they haven't actually come to the point of conclusion, because you can't go against bhakti, right? So then, okay. So now here's their evidence, or their you know, their argument. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32, it was said that even liberated persons fall from the spiritual goal if they disrespect the Lord. Also, it is stated, quote, if they offend the Lord endowed with inconceivable Shakti, the liberated souls are again subject to impressions of samsara, vasana bhasya. So even at a liberated platform, there's a threat of fall down. Then what to speak of conditioned devotees who struggle to even resist the temptations of maya? Hence, it is not appropriate to say that bhakti removes all obstacles, right? Because they're looking at the external point here is that they don't see that they're already functioning on the liberated platform. And if they forget the Lord or make offenses and that, then they can fall back. But the point is the bhakti is never lost, as we see it will be discussed. You know, it may be temporarily, put on hold, but it's never lost. While the other ones, it doesn't matter how far you get to the point of liberation and merge into the Brahman. But when you come back, that's all set to zero. There's nothing left of it. It doesn't carry on. So it's gone. While bhakti, you know, you're always going to have that step by step. And then if there's any difficulties, then it's just a matter of how much time it takes to get over. But one will get over, right? So then the uttara, then the comment back, you know, to come back to the Vishaya and try to establish that and counter their argument. The aspect of falling from liberated position doesn't apply for the devotees, as is stated in the following verse. So what it's talking about there, that these verses are talking about, of them falling from the liberated, is not what it's talking about with the devotee. Because the devotee is on the liberated platform from the engagement in the transcendental. So that's the point, is the jnani, he can only relieve the karma field and be engaged in the jnana field, you know, and get into the spiritual aspect. But it doesn't mean that he's functioning on the transcendental. It's transcendental in the way of, you say, it's above the material energy, so we can call them transcendentalists. But in reality, as real transcendentalists, they're not. Does that make sense? You know, that's the whole point, is they not actually. So the following verse from Bhagavatam. O Madhava, Supreme Lord, Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus, they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.33. Right? So sometimes fall for that, but they're not like the non-devotees, because the non-devotees, they fall, they don't know what's going to happen to them. They fall from the path of liberation. You're back in karma, samsara, and you don't know when you'll take up the thing again, you know. And it's not that what you gain before remains. No, it's lost. It's just like you make money this life, and then next life, that money's not there. You know, if you've done some good work related to what the scriptures recommend, then you may have good facility with money. But the point is that will be burnt and lost. Because let's say you're supposed to get a lakh of rupees. Once you've got the lakh, that's it. That karma is over. Now, it's dependent on what you do with this lakh. You know, if you invest it, you deal with it nicely, you give in charity, you in some way augment it, then you may continue it. But otherwise, if you just spend it, then it's gone. So the same with the piety coming from the liberation, they fall back into the material energy, depending on where they come. Of course, it mentions they come as grass. That's where they come. And then from grass, then that gets eaten. You know, that gets, then goes into the grains, from the grains and like this, and then it goes back into the cycle, and then they can start elevating themselves again. But if in that point you use all those good positions for knowledge and all that simply for getting benefit, social benefit and academic, you know, and other benefits, then it's gone. So you can't stay. That's the thing. Well, bhakti remains that as it is. Like Prabhupada said, if you come up to 50%, if you fall down, when you start again, you'll start at 51. Right? Like that. The person performing sadhana bhakti does not fall from the path of bhakti. For one sees that Gajendra and Bharata continued their bhakti, though they fell from human life. Because the devotees are bound with friendship to the Lord, Bhadda Sauhurida, having great faith as sadhakas, they are fully protected by him. Hence, even if such a sadhaka is sometimes overcome by the desires for sense gratification, they are not defeated by their senses, right? So they're still not defeated. You can say is it's, because when you say defeated by the senses means that then that becomes your purpose. That becomes your, what your, you know, your raison d'etre is that's what you're endeavoring for. But that doesn't happen to devotees. They may fall down in that, and then you have the typical, you know, like the brahmachari, he's saying, okay, you know, this Sunday feast, I'm going to control myself and I'm not going to eat, you know, two buckets of halava and, you know, all this and that. And then, you know, he's got the determination. He's talking with others and they're all going, yeah, you know, and it's all good. And he sits down and he just eats his sabji and he's all that. And it's all, you know, still looking good. And then he starts the halava and then it goes more. And so now you want some more. And hey, I got half a bucket here. I'm not, you know, and then he ends up eating two buckets again. Then the next morning he's going, oh, my stomach, I'm never doing that again. You know, like that. So that, you know, that'll go on for, you know, like 6 months, you know, like that. Or so for some people, maybe more, but, you know, whatever, you know, and then after 6 months, then, okay, he cuts it down to one bucket, you know, so he's, you know, so the senses never actually defeat him. There may be setbacks, but then it's never defeated. It's just like when you see the markets going up, it doesn't go in a straight line. Like in the board meeting, they just make a straight line. You know, showing, you know, this is how the profits are going to go. It's never like that. It goes, it's going generally up, but it's going up and down within that up. You know, so like that. So that's the point of the karmis. They're defeated because they're set back and, you know, by that, the piety is destroyed and all these different things. And so they're different because they're already, even they're being pious, they're in control. The senses are in control. It's just the senses want pious sense gratification instead of impious. That's all. And the fear and the lonely, they're defeated by that because they're always alone because it's only them. All the, you know, all of the living entities, you know, it's not important about them. There's no relationship with the Lord. It's just about Brahman. They're going to be lonely. So the fear remains. They're always defeated. They're never actually go beyond. That's the thing. Then another quote, if my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be bound by material desires, but because of his generally strong bhakti, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. Oh, I read that one. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.8. Right, so that's the thing is that it appears to be bound, but they're not. So that's why we have to have that faith in bhakti. Like that. Otherwise, then you think anything goes wrong, you know, because they're not devotees or, yeah, no, now they're going to suffer or, oh, no, it's that it's a matter of that traversing that path towards Krishna because of their friendship with Krishna and how nicely they've established that. Then it goes more smoothly and more that they're, you know, absorbed in or distracted. It'll just take a little longer. That's all. So Purva Paksha, now the doubt comes up again based on what is just said here. But we see that the results of the process of karma are immediate, whereas the bhakti process is hard to perfect, and that its results are slow, right? So now then, you know, they're saying, you know, okay, you defeated that one point, you know, but then because we see is it's always going to come back to karma like that. Okay, but, you know, in karma, you get quick results like that. So that means there's no obstacles. But in bhakti, it's hard to perfect. It's slow. So that means there's more obstacles. And you said it's more auspicious, but it's slower to get results while the other one gets results quickly. Auspicious is getting results, like. Like, you know, what is it? The standard, I don't know if you see if it's still used nowadays, but before you'd always see that they'd put, you know, like the thing of Ganesh or something, and then always you'd have Shubh and Lab, you know, auspicious and profit, like that. And so that's the standard, you know, kind of Mahavakya, you know, auspiciousness and profit. Right. So he's saying here is that it's not giving immediate results. So that means it seems karma is more auspicious. And you're saying no obstacles, but bhakti is harder to get a result. Right. So now the utra. This is not true. The path of bhakti bestows immediate results as shown below. Right. It's just they can't see it. Right. Quote, just as fire turns wood to ashes, bhakti to the Lord burns up sins immediately. Padma Purana 585.31. So what you're seeing is why is the jiva in karma? Right? Why is the jiva? Okay, just a minute. Okay, well here, we'll just read this. Just as fire burns by its nature, bhakti similarly produces effects independently of the prescribed rules, right? This is important. Therefore, it is confirmed that the path of bhakti is not arduous and the results are not delayed, right? Because one may say it's arduous or delayed, but you're looking at what you're getting. You don't notice. Like if you're trying to get to, let's say someone is just trying to get from this room to the next room, right? But you're trying to get from this house to, you know, another house on the other side of town. So, you know, they're taking their time and all that. And so in 5 minutes, they get there. While you've left immediately, 5 minutes, you're way farther than getting to the next room. But because you have a farther goal, it appears that it might be a little bit more. So that's why it's not arduous. You're actually going very smoothly. You're moving to the next, you know, that distance in much quicker time. Just as the sun effortlessly dispels countless fogs with its own rays, devotees, through the practice of bhakti, effortlessly eradicate numerous sins. In contrast, followers of other paths struggle significantly and may not completely eliminate sins even after tremendous labor. Right, there's so much work because no matter what you do, something else is going to come up. Some other problem is going to be there. It's just the way it works. It's always going to be as whatever you solve. You know, like the person is there, you know, then growing up, he has to come to maturity, finishes the, you know, his classes and all his work and all that, you know, so much trouble. He finally gets and he figures, oh yeah, when this is done, then life will be great. So he finishes his degrees, he finishes things. Now he has to get a job. Okay, so then, okay, well, if I just get a job, then everything will be great. Remember before he said, when I finish the degree, it'll be great? No, now he has to get the job. And then at the job, he's finally got the job, and he thinks, okay, now it'll be great. But now at the job, then this one gives him trouble, that one gives him trouble, the boss gives him trouble, everyone gives him trouble. You know, and he thinks, okay, if I just work hard and I move up and I do this and that, and then it'll be okay. But it's no, it may get a little bit less. It may be instead of your guy's neck, you know, on bottom, you know, bottom just workers bothering you. Now you move up, your middle management, now middle management bothers you, or the higher guys bother you. So it's always going to be. And then you think, okay, you know, I got to get that, get my money, you know, get my house and all that. And then I'll be ready. Then I'll get married. Then I'll be happy. Right, so he finally does all that with great work. Then he gets married and all that, And all that. And then now, yes, you know, the couple have to get to know each other. You got the relatives, and then you have, of course, the grandmother, right? You know, not the grandmother, mother-in-law, right? Grandmothers generally tend to be nice, you know, but whatever. And then that one you're never going to get over. It's just not happening. Therefore, then, you know, where is this happening? Okay, then, you know, when we have children and that, okay, then we'll be happy. No, when you have children, when they grow up and like that, then we'll be happy. Okay, when they finish their exams, then we'll be happy. Oh, no, when they get married, then we'll be happy. Then when they have children, our grandchildren, then we'll be happy. And by that time, you're dead. So where is the point where there's this happiness that they talk about? Where is it? You know, the fleeting moment here and there. So it's always obstacles. It's always that. And even though, yes, you apply one auspicious, then there's another inauspicious, because the basis of it is envy. The fear is envy. It's always going to be there. Karma's based on, it's based on the fearful aspect that, you know, okay, I've neglected God. I want to be the controller and enjoyer. So therefore, now I don't have that connection. You know, then I'm the loneliness. Therefore, then I take on the material identity. The material identity. Then I have the connection with the material world. And I think, okay, now I'll have my, you know, my friends, society, friendship and love and all that. But then, you know, you're envious of them. They're envious of you. You know? So that's the, you know, isn't there that song? Oh, it's, I'm envious of you, you're envious of me, we're one big envious society, but like that, isn't it? There's some song like that, isn't it? So like that. So that's the point, is that it's not correct. It's not true. So it's not there. So what happens is, when the devotee takes it up, karma, you're always in that cycle. Jnana, you're just outside that, but still in the mundane. But for the devotee, they're actually outside of that. So they're on the liberated platform, because the soul already is liberated. It's just not identifying in its natural position. So it takes on that external gross and subtle identity. So now they're functioning in the platform of understanding that they're the soul, the servant of God and all that. So they're on a Vijnanamaya platform, though it may be externally, it appears that so many other things are going on. And because of that devotion, they're actually, their karma is gone. Krishna is now just arranging with them in the karma to that the things that they're attached to, because they're identifying with a gross and subtle nature. Therefore, there's certain things within that that they consider to be, you know, auspicious and things to gain and things that'll be wonderful and all that. So within that false identity, that's where Krishna works. So he's not working from the platform of karma. So what the results you're getting are from Krishna interacting with you based on your false identity. So the less the false identity, the less the problems, right? And the material world is always going to be a problem. So as you advance, then even though it is a problem around you, it bothers you less, you know, because, you know, it's not important to you. It's only if something bothers you when it's important to you. When it's not important to you, then it doesn't bother you, right? So it's not that it goes away. You know, it's just like you listen to the news, the whole world is falling apart. You don't listen to the news for some days, you're fine. You know, it's just the way it is. Yeah. So, you know, it's because you're not involved in it, so it doesn't mean anything to you. So it's that simple. Or it's like, remember, you know, mentioning something to somebody, oh yeah, you know, it's here, you know, it must be so difficult and that, and they're going, no, everything's fine, because they're not listening to the news. So everything around them is fine, you know. Or in India, you know, something happens, you know, on the other side of India and that, and then people are calling, oh, how's it going, you know, and there we heard there's riots, there's this, there's that, there's floods, you know, but where we are is fine, nothing's going on, you know. So that's the whole point, is that it, it's it only means something to you if you're involved. So if you stop identifying with it, and that, then it starts to be less of a problem, right? So it's only consideration is how much it is, how you say, how much it is, how much it is, you know, useful that you're engaging in Krishna's service. What's your duty? So in other words, if your duties and that, you know, within the Daiva Varnashram, then you perform those, or within your, you have your Pancharatrik, you might have, you know, nice engagement fully with that, or you have our sadhana. So what are the duties within the Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, and Daiva Varnashramak? Then those remain, and everything else you don't have to worry about anymore. So things that were very important before may not be so important anymore. Those 15 cars that you have, you know, in your garages are so important today, but then when you start taking up Krishna consciousness, you find that, well, actually, we only use 3 of them, you know, and a 4th one occasionally. Okay, so we'll keep 4. And then you can get rid of the other 11. You know, so it's just what you actually engage that you do. If you engage all 15, hey, they stay. But if you don't, then, you know, what's the point? So that's the. So then now another doubt. You know, that means, it means not the main doubt, but another argument comes up. Okay. Even the process of karma and jnana can destroy grievous sins, right? So they're saying, okay, bhakti destroys all these things effortlessly. No. Process of karma and jnana can destroy grievous sins, right? The process of jnana has the power to fully destroy sins, as stated below, right? Then here, completely counteracting sin is not at all possible by performing atonement, for the sin is committed out of ignorance. Real atonement is attaining jnana. So they're saying, see, here's the jnana, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.11. Right? Because counteracting the sin doesn't, because the, as Prabhupada says, points out, is that the desire for sin still remains. We want to counteract the reaction for what we've done wrong. But the point is, that's not going to happen. Right? You can, or even if you do, because you're doing, again, you're going to do the same thing. So it's committed out of ignorance because of our identifying with the body. Right? So real atonement is attaining jnana, all right? So then they're going to take it. That means the jnana of you know, impersonal liberation. But as we see here, then continue. Indra's sin for killing Vritta was canceled by performing a horse sacrifice, process of karma, right? Then he's giving the quote, O king, the Brahmana sages approached him and had him properly perform a horse sacrifice, along with worship of the Supreme Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.13.18. Hence, it is evident that both the paths of karma and jnana can effectively eliminate many serious sins. Therefore, it would be inaccurate to claim that the path of bhakti is unparalleled, right? Because you're saying they do the same thing, you know, like that. But, you know, the thing is they're not catching the connection between, you know, the comparison, right? Uttara. The killing of Vritta, who was a great devotee of the Lord, having prema, cannot be atoned by performing a horse sacrifice. The performance of the horse sacrifice was for common people who believed that the horse sacrifice was the atonement. Right? Vritta's killing was instructed by the Lord in order to remove his demoniac nature. There was no fault in Indra, since he was inspired by the Lord. Thus, worship of the Lord was the atonement, because it mentioned performing a horse sacrifice along with worship of the Lord. So the horse sacrifice was for the general people, but the worship of the Lord was for actually Indra and for the thing. So Manu, when it's going through, it goes through many, many chapters are there on talking about, you know, what has been done, what sin is there, what is the various atonements and this and that. But it mentions after, you know, at some point there, after all that's being done, and so we're going to say, okay, if you do this, you need this to counteract it and that. And everyone talks about countering sin and all that, because that's what we want. Is anybody talking about countering piety? Because piety, then you get more piety you know, on the material platform, you want more sense gratification. Like you get piety, so you get money. Now, what do you want to do with the money? You're just going to give it all away and sit under a tree? No, you want to enjoy it. So all it does is give rise to sense gratification. So that's the point, is how does piety help the devotee? Right? It's only if the facilities that are there accrued from piety are used in Krishna's service, there's a benefit. But if it's not, it just entangles them just as much as the sin, just this nice entanglement or not nice entanglement, right? Yes, and so after having mentioned all these, I think it's many chapters on what you're supposed to do and what counters what and what you do and all these different things, then at one point it comes up a discussion about what about sins that aren't known about? Right? Unknown sins that other people don't know, the mass of people don't know about. Then there it says, then Manu says, then you chant your japa. Chant japa, study shastra, associate with saintly persons. That then counters, because the real problem is ignorance. And you want to counter that ignorance by advancing in spiritual understanding. So his point is that all these prayaschittas and everything like that, that's for the common person. That's for the materialist. That's for the person in ignorance, because he thinks that's actually going to do something. You know, that's the point. Is that the only actual thing that does is worshiping the Lord. That's the only prayaschitta. That's the only purification. That's the only atonement. Everything else is literally for, you know, it's pious, but it's literally for the common person. Because otherwise, if they thought, oh, you only had to chant, then they'd do all nonsense and then chant. You know, they commit that seventh offense. Like that. And so therefore they think you have to do this. Because I remember once someone was asking the school, this kid did this. What are you going to do to rectify him, punish him? I say, I'm going to give him some service. You know, he's going to do some weeding and cleaning and in the dom, you know, dom seva, like that, to make the place nice. Because there's always, you know, daily cleaning is going on, but there's always some areas that, you know, need some extra work and cleaning. I said, I'm going to do that. And so this devotee was incredulous. How is that going to help? You know, you have to have some strict punishment, you know, something. And I'm saying, no, the cleaning is going to help. Right, you know, so it doesn't. That's the point, is that people want to see something. Otherwise, then they keep saying the Mahavakya, nothing's changed. When so much has changed, but what it means is I don't see any, I don't feel anything, I don't experience it. It hasn't changed for me. My life is no different. I'm just as miserable as I was. You know, I'm envious of this person. They've been punished, but I'm still just as miserable, so nothing's changed. So that's the problem with karma, is based on envy. And so therefore you can't really rectify it. Right? Then he continues the chart, you know, the points here. Jnana and karma are not as powerful in destroying sin as bhakti is. This is expressed in the following verse, right? Because he's trying to make them all equal. Quote, only by bhakti performed with full faith can the devotees obtain me. Paramatma, the object of love. Oh, contain me, Paramatma, the object of love. Bhakti fixed in me purifies even a dog eater of his low birth. Right? And that karma and jnana are not doing. Right? Bhakti purifies a dog eater of his low birth. This means that bhakti destroys the parabdha sins, effects of karma destined to be experienced in this life. It means he's born as a dog eater, but he takes up bhakti. He's no longer living like a dog eater. He's living like a Vaishnava, as a Brahmin. So where did the parabdha karma come that he would have been in the environment of a dog eater and acted like a dog eater and like that? That's all gone. That's bhakti. Right? Not only this, bhakti also eradicates desires, vasana, which are the root cause of sin, and also eliminate the ignorance that gives rise to these desires, right? So eradicating desires, neither the path of karma or jnana can do. Not at all. They can't get rid of that. They can only counteract. And you may think, okay, it's not good to go in that direction. I should find another direction to fulfill my desire. So you go from swing from sinful to pious back to sinful like that. And the ignorance. And so you can say is, yes, there's some ignorance that, okay, you go from impious to pious. Further knowledge, then you go up to the point of jnana, understanding of the soul. But because they don't go past that point of I'm the soul, that I'm the servant of God, therefore they're still in ignorance because that's what's there. So that the platform of the as we mentioned, the settled, you know, that settled point of the where the identity that I'm the controller and enjoyer, lingushurir, yeah. So that then has is that they can't get to that point of getting rid of ignorance. Even though you might have knowledge up to that, it still won't take them. So when it says jnana, it means bhakti. Like that. That's the main thing. Siddhanta. Therefore, bhakti is the supremely auspicious path that not only eliminates all obstacles and purifies one from all sins, but also nurtures the cultivation of positive qualities like jnana and vairag, endearing the devotee to all. So this jnana and vairag means it's in context of the Lord, because the mundane jnana and vairag, then they don't necessarily endear one to necessarily men people, because that, you know, it becomes very austere, the heart becomes very hard, and so like that. Yes, okay, so that's basically the unfolding of the logical progression on how this Adhikarana is going to unfold to establish bhakti, you know, and now we'll see the details of that in all the verses. Right. Anucheda 121. Thus it is established that bhakti is the Abhideya. Though bhakti is taught in many places with mixture of karma or other processes, it should be understood that such statements are spoken to make persons who are fixed in other processes successful by relating the process to bhakti, and to make them perform pure bhakti alone by developing a taste for bhakti. Right? So that's the whole point that it's being there, is that these other processes are mentioned, that this is the process of karma, this is the process of jnana. Okay, how will that process work? Through bhakti. Okay, I want the results of karma, I want the results of jnana. Therefore, I want to apply it. So then what's the application? The Abhideya is still bhakti, right? Though I may use it temporarily, but the point is bhakti is always the Abhideya, because to make karma or jnana work, I have to use bhakti. Now, because I'm not interested in bhakti, I'm only using bhakti as a tool to get what I want, you know, so I'm still maintaining that ignorance in my relationship with the Lord, and the ignorance of identifying the gross and subtle body, you know, or at least maintaining the ignorance of identifying with the linga sharir, right? So then I'm going to perform the elements of bhakti as recommended in the context of karma and jnana, and when I get the results of the karma and jnana I'm looking for, I'm going to give up the bhakti, and the bhakti is going to disappear. In other words, bhakti inspired me, you know, but the idea is that in following that path, you may come across the devotees and start to see that there's something more, and therefore try to move forward. So it's not that, how you say, the karma and jnana, there is no such thing as pure. It has to have the element of bhakti. Now, because it's working by bhakti, bhakti is the Abhideya, that gives you that wide range of being, you know, karma with a little small mix of bhakti, right? I do the ritual and a little bit of bhakti I add, you know, grudgingly, but, you know, kind of, you know, that little smile, you know, like that. And but as that kind goes more and you start to get a taste more for the bhakti aspect, I might put in the bhakti more, you know, and the karma starts to become less, until at one point it switches from bhakti Mr. Karma to karma Mr. Bhakti. And then from karma, Mr. Bhakti, it'll go to Nishkam Karma Yoga, right? Instead of Sakam Karma Yoga. You know, but I still have the interest in being freed from material. So I switch from getting the results of karma into getting jnana. And then as Nishkam Karma goes a little bit more, then it turns into jnana yoga, you know, which is mixed with the bhakti, you know, it means your bhakti, karma misra, jnana misra bhakti, until it gets to the point of pure bhakti. So that's the thing, is that because bhakti is the abhideya, it can be involved from where you hardly have anything up to where it turns to pure bhakti. So that's why then for the devotee, the process doesn't change. It's just a matter of maybe what details, what instruments he's using in the expression of the bhakti, but it doesn't actually change. So he may be, you know, his job and his money and his family and all his contacts and this and that and all whatever he does, that's what he's, you know, connecting and expressing. But with time, those start to become less and less, and more direct activities become more prominent. Okay. In order to, so continuing with the Anucheda, in order to show that bhakti alone is the abhideya, though its glory was explained previously, it will be explained again and again by all sages. Right? So even it's been explained, it's one of those things you continue to explain because it's something so important that you have, it's repeated. So that's why you see is those things important are constantly repeated. And those things that are not so important, but it's a fact or something, it's mentioned once in a proper place where it can be seen and used. And after that, it's not mentioned again. So if it's necessary, use it. But if not, it won't. So like we see in Manu, the point of again and again coming up and understanding that the japa is the most important thing, or chanting. In other words, chanting is the most important thing for a Brahmin, and the Vaishnava being the realized Brahmin, then the chanting, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, associating with saintly persons, worshiping the deity like that, going to holy places, hearing from saintly persons, you know, these things, these are important. So it's mentioned again and again. But some technical detail, you know, like we said on how to purify wool, you know, you wash it, you know, you put it out in the sun or the wind, moonlight, or you wash it with, you know, the particular, paste and or powders that will help. And then that's it. It never mentions it again. Right. But the position of the Brahmin, position of the study of the scriptures, position of the whole, you know, association, worship of the Lord, that's mentioned again and again. So these little facts, they'll be mentioned, technical facts will be mentioned wherever they need to be mentioned. And that's it. They've been done. But then the point of devotion, that'll be mentioned over and over again. The intention is to show that other than bhakti, nothing should be done. So ultimately, that's what you're trying to do. It's only bhakti should be done. But since you're doing bhakti connected with karma, jnana, then you continue that, but it's the bhakti that should remain. And so then, you know, just as karma turns into jnana, then that platform should turn into bhakti. You know, and you don't have to go through that. You can, wherever you are, just connect to bhakti and just go there, because bhakti is the abhideya anyway. Thus, it is said that bhakti is the supreme dharma and bestows all desires. Quote, etavan eva lokesmin pumsam nishre yashodayaha tivrena bhakti yogena mano mayarpitam stiram. The mind offered to me with pure bhakti, with steadiness alone, creates the highest benefit for men in this world. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-44. Udriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Thus, pure bhakti offered to me is the best of all. There is nothing higher than this. Everything else is inferior. This bhakti is firm, tivrena, right? Because it mentioned there, with steadiness, without cheating, without devoid of karma and jnana, and pure, right? So steady means it's always based, it's always devotional. It doesn't, sometimes you're interested in the jnana, sometimes into the karma, you know, so there's no trickery going on there. And so then that's what the point comes to, that's going to create the best benefit. So since that's the best benefit, one should always be striving for that. So even though one's using karma yoga or jnana yoga, and so the pure bhakti is mixed with karma and jnana, but your intent is to come to the platform of pure bhakti. So when you're performing, you'll try to do it as nice as possible, as full as possible, as complete as possible. But, due to, habit of being in the material world and not being absorbed nicely, then, there's going to be times where we're going to remember the Lord and it'll go nicely, and times we'll forget. And so, as it mentioned before, even though one forgets, then point is because bhakti is the main thing in the life of the devotee, again, he'll come back to that position. And so then it's just a matter of time. Krishna takes care, Krishna protects, because they're not working actually on the karma. It only looks to them like they're following karma and jnana. They're following bhakti. That's why for the devotee, we say karma yoga, jnana yoga, we mean bhakti. We mean is actions in Krishna consciousness and knowledge in Krishna consciousness, and then its application of the two together. With knowledge, you perform action, right? Engage the senses with knowledge. That's abhideya. And so it just looks like that because of our still having that slight, like from a dream, still thinking about what happened in the dream. So still thinking about the identity with the gross and subtle platform, separate from Krishna. So it just takes some time like that. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. That was from Siddhartha Darshini 325-44. Here the words mano maya arpitam, which mean the mind being fixed on me, are significant. One should fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna or his incarnation. To be fixed steadily in that freedom is the way of liberation, right? So that's the freedom. The freedom is to be fixed in the Lord, not that it's a tool to be there. It itself is already, it's the process, it's the goal. That's it's already so perfect. Ambarish Maharaj is an example. He fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. He spoke only on the pastimes of the Lord. He smelled only the flowers and tulsi offered to the Lord. He walked only to the temple of the Lord. He engaged his hands in cleansing the temple. He engaged his tongue in tasting the foodstuff offered to the Lord. And he engaged his ears in hearing the great pastimes of the Lord. In this way, all the senses were engaged. First of all, the mind should be engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord, very steadily and naturally. Because the mind is the master of the senses. When the mind is engaged, all the senses become engaged. That is bhakti yoga, right? So that's the point he's pointing out here, is that when the mind is engaged in bhakti, means when we're remembering the Lord, then the senses become engaged, right? Because we see is that this whole fear that we're talking about, then it has the point of one feature of it is we've forgotten the Lord. And the other feature is we've identified with the material, gross and subtle bodies. So if the mind's remembering the Lord, we've cleared the one fear. And that means then we're naturally going to engage that conditioning that we have in the Lord's service. So we've counteracted the other. So that's the point, is bhakti naturally means that you're remembering the Lord and doing services for him. Yoga means controlling the senses. The senses cannot be controlled in the proper sense of the term. They are always agitated. This is also true with a child. How long can he be forced to sit down silently? It's not possible. Even Arjuna said, Chanchalam hi mana Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 6:34. Quote, the mind is always very agitated, end quote. Best course is to fix the mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. Mano maya arpitam stiram. One seriously engages in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest perfectional stage. All Krishna conscious activities are on the highest perfectional platform. Perfectional level of human life. Teachings of Lord Kapila. Right. So this was there, very nice. Then, what are we doing on time? Okay, another few minutes. Then the next verse, the Acharya gives, Akama sarvakamo va mokshakama udhara dihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. The person desiring destruction of all desires, the person with all desires, and even the person with an intense desire for liberation, if he has good intelligence, will worship the Supreme Lord with pure bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 2, 3, 10. Udvriti, Srila Prabhupada. Bhakti yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal of both karma yoga and jnana yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter is emphatically declared that bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, right? So means means the Abhideya, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of bhakti yoga. So that's the application of, you know, the bhakti techniques. Even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. So even if one still has those desires, you still perform bhakti. And with time, then those desires will go away and bhakti will become the main thing, because bhakti gives the taste and satisfaction of the soul that karma and jnana can't. Karma and jnana can't actually please the soul. Right? An akama is one who has no material desire. A living being naturally being the part and parcel of the supreme whole, purusham purnam, has the natural functions to serve the supreme being. Just as the parts and parcels of the body, the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert like a stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position, and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as Bhajaniya Parama Purusham Shuka Matra Swa Shukatvam in his Sandarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition of the living beings is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world, and as such, intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc., by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. So this desire to see others' happiness and therefore be happy is there because it's inherent that the soul, being part and parcel of the Lord, would want to see the Lord happy. So here's that the akama is then, it means the devotee. Right? Because he only wants to see things, the Lord happy. So, and then the sarvakami, one who's, you know, totally into karma, just wants all material desires. Mokshakami, he just wants liberation. All those three positions, then if he has good intel, he'll just worship the Supreme Lord. So like the devotees are worshiping the Supreme Lord, the karmis and the jnanis will also worship. Yes. No. Very good. Yeah. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Brajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis loved the Lord without any return. And this is the perfect exhibition of the akama spirit, right? So in other words, that you're doing everything for the Lord. So pure devotion is there. But then of that, then we see is that the residents of Vrindavan, and specifically the gopis, then that is the fullest manifestation of akama. So it's pure unalloyed devotion. And so the akama means that we want to see the Lord happy. But then, you know, it goes to the point of it's just seeing the Lord happy. They're not looking for anything for themselves. Yeah, the kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, Whereas the spirit of akama is fully exhibited in the spiritual world, right? So you're going to get that. So therefore, having desire and destruction of all desires, he doesn't have, he just wants to serve the Lord. That's the spirit, the spiritual world. Person with all desires, that's the material world, and the person desiring liberation, that's in between, right? So all three positions, bhakti is the only process. Yes? No? Okay. So end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.